It was on page 844. Page 844, V'hinei yom bo l'Hashem v'chulak shelech v'kirbech. This is the Haftorah of the first day of Sukkos. Does this sound familiar? First day of Sukkos is the Haftorah. V'hinei yom bo l'Hashem v'chulak shelech v'kirbech. And the spoils of war will be distributed v'kirbech in your midst. Now, by the way, again, the same issue we always come across, that is the chapter breaks. Why is there a chapter break here? Perek Yudalet. Is this really a new topic? This is not a new topic. This is just a continuation of the theme of Melchemes HaGemagot. Okay, every time you have a chapter, you get the impression that you're discussing a common theme. That's not necessarily true. This is not a new theme. This is a continuation of the last parak. The last parak said that. The last parak mentioned that there's going to be some apocalypse. The world's going to come to an end. And two-thirds of the world is going to be destroyed. One-third is going to remain. And the one-third that's going to remain, the one-third is going to be refined. The world is going to be put into the core, the kiln. Yeah, I'm Hall?
We have noise coming from downstairs.
Yes, make it a little louder?
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. Okay, by the way, today, we're also learning L'Zeichel Uli Nishmas. Mayor Appeldorf's grandparents and family that were led out of Kiddush Hashem in the Shoah. Okay, was it just the microphone? Is it a little better now in the hall?
Yes, it
is. Sure. Is
I don't know if closing the door would help because it's coming from below.
Okay, so this chapter, Mark, I can hear you. Mark, are you talking to me? Mark, we're mute.
I'm Rabbi Eliezer Kippel's father, Rabbi Yaakov Ben Eliezer. You might have met him many years ago. He passed away 32 years ago when he was a Chaim Berliner.
Kiffel. I know, okay, yeah. Mayor's Lotowitz's family, right?
His brother's wife,
right? Yeah. Okay. I remember his mother. I remember Lazy Kiffel's mother.
His brother is still not married.
I don't remember.
Is he a single brother?
Lazer is not married.
No.
Lazer is not married. Okay. Let's go further. So over here we have. So okay. Again, we learn Lazeichu Nishmas Kiffel.
Yaakov.
Yaakov Ben.
Eliezer.
May his neshama have an aliyah, and for the family, the grandparents, and the family of Mayor Appeldorf. May the Neshamas have an aliyah. Hashem yinkon damon. Now let's continue. This is a chapter break according to the Christians, but it's not really a chapter break. It's a continuation of everything we've learned until now. We are in the middle of describing what is going to be at the time of the Chemist of the Mother. Oh, excellent. So Mayor Appeldorf is a good question. So why then does the Haftarah start with this pasuk? The fact that it starts with this pasuk is an indication that there is something fresh. Okay, that's true, but this is a general thing that this is the whole topic of discussion where you can analyze every single Haftarah in the parashas of Shavuot and look where they start. Many of them start in the middle of the parak. Okay, they start at least in the middle of the parak of the Christians. So where they start is not necessarily related to the beginning of a topic. Chazal did not want to be matriach the tzibur to read unusually long haftorahs on Shabbos. They limited what was read. They didn't tell you to read the whole Navi. They read a certain section. So just because we are in the middle of a section, for whatever reason, we're going to start in this pasuk. I hear what you're saying. To suggest this would be quantum leap to say that the Christians' influence on our Bible went so far that Chazal were influenced by them as to where they would begin the Haftarah and end the Haftarah. It's very unlikely.
They did the other way.
No, they didn't have any Haftarah. The Christians, they didn't even know from the Haftarah. Because the reason why it's far-fetched is because the Haftarah was already instituted before the chapter breaks were created, I'm assuming. When exactly, one thing we know for sure, that the Haftarahs, originally, it was the discretion of the rabbi what to read each Shabbos. Come to Shulam Shabbos, you have no idea what the Haftarah is.
Why do I think Ezra instituted?
I don't think so. I think Ezra, I don't think there was a Haftarah at the time of Ezra. The Haftarah, there are many reasons why we learn the Haftarah. I don't remember them, I don't remember all them now. The common reason you're going to hear is because there was a Gzeres HaShmat, that the Romans did not allow the Jews to read the Torah. So Chazal didn't want a Shabbos Chobar without there being Kriyas HaTorah. So as a Zecher, that there's something called Kriyas HaTorah, they instituted and we read the Haftarah. And that is why the Haftarah has a minimum of 23 Psukim, 21 Psukim, 21 Psukim, corresponding three psukim for seven aliyos. Just like we have seven aliyos, each aliyah has a minimum of three psukim. So we read 21 psukim to remind us of the requirement that there be seven aliyos.
David Feinstein brings down the practice of reading the Haftarah began during the time of the second base of Mikdash before the Mishnah. The Syrian Greek king Antiochus, as part of his campaign to destroy religion, prohibited the reading of the Torah at the shuls, and the cruel decree was undoubtedly made possible for the sins of our people remained in force until the Mesiras Nefesh of the Hashmonaim brought about the birth of
the Greeks.
Okay, so it's saying it's the Greeks, the Syrian, which takes us back before, it takes us back, I mean, it's long after Ezra, but it's the middle of the Bayis Sheni, okay? It's the middle of the Tekuv of the Bayis Sheni, okay? And the Christians did not begin until the end of the Bayis Sheni. The Christians did not gear up until the Churban approximately overlapped. The Churban Beis HaMikdash, very interestingly, overlapped with the real beginnings of Christianity. When they date their calendar to the year zero, that's the birth of their God, and the Churban we accept took place in the year 70. Now, just because Yoshko was born in the year zero, no one paid any attention to him. I mean, and we know there was more than one Yoshko, and there was development, and there's a lot of corruption, and the history has been distorted and been rewritten, but approximately at the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash is when Christianity got going. They were It was developing to a point beyond return where they overwhelmed us. That was the same tkufa. So you say that the Haftarahs began already the time of the Hashmonaim, which is about 200 years before the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Okay, now there's one thing that's for sure. When Chazal were misaken the Haftarahs, they did not tell the people what to lay. You come to shul, and the rabbi will decide what he wants to learn. He'll decide, he can select anything from Tanakh that he feels is relevant and relates to the Parashas HaShavuot. And then there are the Dalai Parashas, you know, the whole thing is a very complex development of how the Haftarah. This is what you're going to read in the history books. It was an outgrowth of a Gezeras HaShmad, where our enemies did not allow us to practice our religion. They prevented us from reading the Torah. The response of the rabbis were to do something to remind us that we have to read from the Torah. And they instituted the Haftarah. And then when the Shmad, when the Gezeres came to an end, they said, listen, once we are already reading the Haftarah, don't stop. And at some point in time, it became standardized what exactly you should read. And obviously, not everyone agreed. You speak in the back of the Chumash, you have the Mitzvah, you have the Sard, the Ashkenazim, where you start, where you end.
We don't know what
standardized. Maybe someone does, maybe over a Shul, maybe a Shul, but do you know what standardized? I don't know. At some point in time, it was standardized. I don't know when, but in the very beginning, it was not standardized. It was the rabbi's discretion. Just like a rabbi today makes a drasha, when you come to Shul Shabbos, you know what the rabbi's going to say? Do you have any idea? This is a state secret.
I'm not sure he knows.
Very good. Look, you know, you're saying very good. My father told me, and he told me, is that after he has three drushes on every Shabbat, and he says it's three drushes. He has the drasha that he prepared, the drasha that he said, and the drasha that he recorded when Shabbos was over. And they're all very different. What he prepared to say is not exactly what he actually ended up saying when he was standing at the pulpit. And then when he reflected about what he said over Shabbos and wanted to record it in words, so it was refined, and he said it, and it was a different drasha. So there were three drashas. So you say very true. The rabbi does not know what he's going to say when he comes to shul. But simply, when you come to shul, the rabbi uses pulpit today as an opportunity to say something relating to current events. I mean, supposedly. So today, that's not the style in many shuls. Today, the rabbi just says a Dvar Torah. But it used to be, the role of a rabbi, the pulpit, is to hafeich va'hafeich with the kulaba, is to take current events and to get a Torah perspective on current events based upon what we learn from the parasha. What's going on in the world is subject to interpretation. Everyone can say whatever they want. The rabbi, who's supposed to be the spiritual leader of the community and is steeped in learning Torah, he has a different perspective because he is heavily immersed in Torah. And he will take something that people can relate to from the Parashas HaShavua and use it to get perspective, to provide perspective. The original form of getting perspective was not...
Could you say stop maybe for a moment and sometimes we're getting a feedback?
It's fine. I'm okay with it. Are you okay with it? Does it sound good?
No. I'm saying it's a little bit feedback. I said you made it louder because it was the music
okay.
Stopped.
So are you okay with the sound?
It sounds perfect.
It's good? Okay. So instead of giving a drasha, instead of a rabbi giving a drasha, the rabbi would select a portion of the Nevi'im to be his drasha. The rabbi had mastery of Tanakh, of all Nevi'im, and we read the parasha, and there is something going on in the world. There's a war, there is some major, some sensational news that everyone is thinking about, and the rabbi would select a section from the Nevi'im that directly correlated to, I guess, both the parasha and current events. And that was, in essence, the rabbi's drasha. Now, today, that the haftarahs have been standardized, so in order to bring out what's taking place in the world, you just give me the haftarah, because the haftarah, being that it's standardized, is not necessarily going to reflect current events. So the rabbi has to actually, speak about it. Because once the Gezeres HaShmad was over, Chazal said, continue what you were doing. Read the parasha and read the haftarah. Now, this is what you're going to read in the basic history books as to why we read the haftarah, but there's no question about it that there are other reasons as to why they instituted the reading of the haftarah. It's not just because Gzeres HaShmat. There was also a need that we study every Shabbos the words of the Nevi'im. And in fact, what about Kesuvim? What about, there are Kesuvim, there's Tehillim, there's Divrei Hayamim, and there are the Chumash Megillos, and Iyov, Daniel, Ezra, Nehemiah. That was read Shabbos afternoon as the Haftorah for the Kriya at Mincha. So every Shabbos you read the Torah, the Nevi'im, and the Ksuvim, Tanakh. Every Shabbos, all three were read. And the only zecher of this that we have to carry with us today is Yom HaKippurim. On Yom HaKippur, well, it's not, I take that back, it's not correct. Because Yom HaKippur, we read on by Mincha, Yoyna, which is from the Nevi'im. We actually did not read from the Ksuvim. I take that back, it's not true. But it used to be, this is what it says in the Psalm, it used to be that they read Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim. For some reason, that was discontinued, the reading of the Kesuvim. They stopped reading the Haftorah of Kesuvim, Shabbos, Mincha. And it's therefore obvious that the Christians did not even, now that you're mentioning this idea of the Haftorah, now when it became standardized, I do not know, but you're making a very good point, and that is The question is, it is something very interesting as to where we begin a Haftarah. What is considered to be a new section? It's not fair to say that Chazal will tell us to start in the middle of something. That's not their style. When you want to read about a story, you start from the beginning. For example, Megillas Esther. Where do we begin Megillas Esther? From the beginning. Even though Chazal said it's not really important, the main part of Megillah is Balayla Hahu Nadudash Nasanelech. I think many people would be very happy to start the Megillah from the middle of Megillah, Perek Vav. Right? You get home half the time. But that's not the custom. The custom is to start the Megillah from the very beginning. What's another example? The rules for the other Megillahs. Even though the essence of many of these things is not necessarily to hold 9 yards from the beginning, when you do something, you do Meshleimus. So you ask an excellent question. Why is it then that when we read the Haftarah, do we usually start somewhere in the middle? Or maybe not. Maybe you're telling me we're not starting in the middle, we're starting in the beginning. Case in point, over here, you're starting with Perek Yud Aleph. So the Christians, they obviously felt that this is a new beginning because they put here a chapter break. Does that mean that they are correct? And the fact that the standardization of the Haftarah is to start with this pasuk means that this is a new section, not related to the previous section? Not necessarily. Soruch Ian, this is a very great topic. This is a nice topic to go through all of the Haftarahs and have mastery of Nevi'im and to try to find a pattern to the standardization of this. The Haftarahs have been standardized to try to get a feel if when we read a Haftarah, are we starting from the beginning of something, or can you prove that there's a pattern of behavior where we begin a Haftarah specifically in the middle of a story? Maybe there is a demand that we should start in the middle of something to throw you off, and that will arouse your curiosity. I remember many years ago I was learning the Gemara, this is one of the early years of learning, and came across the Pesukim in Shmuel. I had no idea what's going on. These stories of Avner and Shaul, David. So we opened up the pasuk. I mean, we went to whatever was the middle of Sefer Shmuel. We read a few Pesukim. What in the world is going on here? Let's go back to the beginning of the chapter. And then we went back, but even this we did not. The end was we went back to the very beginning of Shmuel and started a Seder to go through the entire Shmuel, because we tried, in order to get context, in order to get an appreciation of when the Gemara cites a pasuk in the middle of Shmuel, you can't just read the pasuk and translate the pasuk without having context, understand what is the pasuk, what is it referring to. And sometimes the only way you can understand what it's referring to is you go back to the very, very beginning. But the Gemara doesn't go back to the very beginning. The Gemara assumes you know everything and just quotes to you what is relevant for the discussion of the Gemara. So Shabbos morning, when Chazal have selected a section, are they telling you, okay, we're going to give you a crash course, we're going to start from the beginning of the section, and everything that you need to know we're going to provide you? Or no, when the Chazal selected a Haftarah, they're thrusting you into the middle of a topic, and if you don't know what's going on, that's your problem. Maybe next week you should spend the whole week learning the entire Sefer in order to get the background, so when we read the few words on Shabbos, a few Pesukim, we go to the middle, the essence, the meat of the matter. It's your problem to have background and context as to what is going on. Megillas Esther, they clearly give you, they don't do that. They tell you we're going to start from the very beginning. And each one of the Chumash Megillahs, we start from the very beginning. But what about the Haftarah? Do we start from the beginning of a section or do we start from the middle? This is something which really needs to be studied to see. Here we have here this Nevuah. This Nevuah Perek Yudal seems to be right in the middle. It doesn't seem that if we were making chapter breaks, we would put a chapter break over here. Even though there's a Psucha. Okay, and I'm not going to argue that there's a parasha psucho, there's a samach, a stuma, which actually means that it's not a new parasha. A parasha stuma means it's like a paragraph. There are two different chapter breaks in the Torah, in Nach itself. There's a pei and a samach. A pei means it's like a new chapter, and a samach means it's a new paragraph. So here, between the last words and these words, in our not Nevi'im, there is a samach, which means there it's a parsha stuma. It is a new paragraph, which means that we really are still in the middle. We're in the middle of the topic. And here, we're thrusting you into the middle for the Haftarah. And here, for whatever reason, they put a chapter break. And certainly, Rabbi Chol's going to tell us in a moment, what is the Christian angle? Apikorsis here, they're always trying to find some reference to their God by beginning this chapter break. In any event, we have to remember this is all about Sukkos. Whatever we learn over the next couple of days, we're going to be all in the way to the theme of the Anani HaKavod, and what is the Yom of Sukkos all about? The day is coming, the Chulak Shelech B'Kerbech, and your spoils will be divided amongst you. Pasuk Beis, V'Asafti Eskol HaGoyim El Yerushalayim, L'Amilchama, I will gather all the nations to Yerushalayim for war. V'Nil Kedoh Ir, the city will be captured. V'Noshasu HaBotim, the homes will be demolished. The Hanashim Tisho Chavna. Okay, this is a Krivich Sif. It's written Tisho Galna, Shegel. Shegel means marital relations. Shegel? Shegal. Shegal, which means
again about marital.
Okay, relations between men and women in a permitted way. It's called marital relations, but not permitted way, it's whatever. It is what it is. Shegal, and here we don't read that because it's not a clean word. That's not a clause. That's a three-letter word. In English, there are four-letter words. In English, in Lush and Kurdish, there are three-letter words. And this is a word that you don't want to say. Therefore, it is changed to the word, a more delicate word, Tishochavna.
Same word from Parshas Kiseitz, from
the Torah. From the Torah, Kisavai, they also, you say the same thing. You say it's spelled in the Torah explicitly, but it's not proper. See, I always tell you that, you know, by me, my parents would wash my mouth out if I said either or. It wouldn't make a difference if I said the word Shegal, or I would say the word Tishochavna. It wouldn't make a difference. In our vocabulary, you get your mouth washed out either way. So to us, it doesn't really make a difference. It refers to the same thing anyway. But there's a delicacy, a nuance, which removes the sting of the heaviness of what the word what it means. The women are going to be raped, in other words, but very, very explicitly. The Yasachatzir Bagoilo, half of the city will go into exile. The Yeser Ha'om Lo Yikores Menu'ir, the remaining will not be cut out from this. It's a very unusual word to Yikores Menu'ir. Now, this is obviously very bizarre because what's going on over here? This pasuk has been told after we learned yesterday that two thirds of the city will be destroyed and one third will remain.
Well,
and we learned that.
According to
one opinion. And also, but I mean, what's the whole say there, how we learned also not that long ago? We had other psukim going back in Perikid Gimel, Perikid Beis. I mean, this theme keeps on repeating itself over and over again. Many of the commentators learn all these ideas referring to Yimos HaMashiach, and there seems to be repetition, and there are contradictions. Didn't the world already come to an end already so many times in Sefer Zechariah? How many times can the world come to an end? How many lives? More lives than a cat. How many times is going to repeat this going to repeat itself? The sequence of, another war, another tragedy, the city of Yerushalayim is going to be captured, the Nashim. What's going on over here? How many times? And here it's the end of the Sefer. Listen, No, I don't think anyone, we all do not know what this means, and when Mashiach will come in hindsight, we'll be able to look back. The only idea, only simple idea that we always come back to is and explain this, is that the Geula, the Milchemes Geigel Magog, has really been going on for already 1,952 years. This is nothing new. From the moment that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, that was the moment of the new beginning. The new beginning, Zorach HaShemesh Ubo HaShemesh. We learned yesterday about the Asorah Haruge Malchus. The Asorah Haruge Malchus is considered to be the Gemar of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The Asorah Haruge Malchus took place over a 65-year period of time. It began a little bit before the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and the last of the Asura Harugi Malchus were killed together with the Churban of Beitar. And that was 65 years, that was the Gemara. So in Tisha B'Av, when we focus on the Chur Beis HaMikdash, we also make mention of the Asara Harugim Malkus, because in truth that was the it was a process of Churban. It was a process, and the Churban went through many different stages. There was the Churban Bayis Rishayim, and then there was the Churban Bayis Sheni, and then the Makeh B'Patish was the Asara Haruge Malchus. And if you want to go further, you can say no, that wasn't the end. There was the pogroms that we talk about, there was the First Crusade. That was also a process of Churban. Churban is a process. But Zeh L'Uma Zeh, just as Churban is a process which goes from stage to stage, the Churban Bayis Rishon, the Churban Bayis Sheni, the Asara Gemalchus, the First Crusade, everything, all the pogroms and tsaros in the middle, Holocaust, the Chmelnytsky massacres, pogroms, it's a process of Churban. But Zeh L'Uma Zeh, at the same time, there's a process of Geula that is unfolding beneath our eyes throughout history. So they go together. How could they go together? Well, Chazal said the day that Rabbi Akiva was murdered was the day that Rabbeinu HaKadosh was born. So Rabbi Akiva is certainly considered to be the Gemar of the Bayis Sheni, the Beis HaMikdash, and Rabbeinu HaKadosh, who authored the Mishnayos, Torah Shel Bal Peh, that is the beginning of the Geula. To have the Koyach of Torah is certainly something which has preserved Klal Yisrael. Yet it's undeniable is that the secret to Jewish continuity, a major portion, a major chunk of the secret to Jewish continuity that we should be around today after 1,952 years, we should still be observant, and Klal Yisrael is thriving, is only because of Torah. When did that Torah reach point of crystallization and a systemic approach to the study of Torah, which would guarantee that it remained forever? Rabbeinu HaKadosh. That's the codification of the entire Torah in the Shicha Sidre Mishnah, which has been developed and expanded. Every single thing that we have today goes back to the Mishnah, Torah Shel Bal Peh. That occurred, his birth. The man that would do that, that would bring out, that would guarantee our survival, was born. It's a Medrash. It says explicitly, he was born on the day that Rabbi Akiva was murdered. The day Rabbi Akiva was tortured and murdered, Rabbi was born. So there is a process. There is a process in place. Churban is a process, and Geula is a process. And these two processes are happening at the same time almost. It's something which the parallel worlds. It's not a contradiction that as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is bringing a Churban to purify us, to cleanse us, he's also at the same time Borei the Refua Koidim the Makkah. He's also in the same moment in time going through a process of Geula. And here, when we learn Sefer Zechariah, the most esoteric Sefer of all of the Sefer Nevi'im, about multiple rounds of Churban, that's referring to the Mochemes Goig Umagoig, it's not Mochemes Goig Umagoig, it's just one battle. It's one battle. It's a process of many battles with the goal of winning the war. And each of these psukim allude to a different element which maybe already has happened to some degree in the past. So that's the basic answer.
Well, Rabbi Abarbanel says there's three wars of Gog and Magog. Two already happened. He lists, he says, the Crusades was the second one. The first one was by Churban when they kicked the Jews out of Eretz Yisrael. That was between, again, the Romans were with the Yishmaelim then, too. They weren't Notzrim yet, but nevertheless, that was one. Second one, I said, the Crusades. And the third one is Lasid Lava.
So what would the Abarbanel say if he was living today? He would have a lot more material to work with. He could talk about the Holocaust. He could talk about the Chmelnytsky massacres, the pogroms that went on for the one in Russia, the horrific pogroms and the suppression.
He explicitly says between the Arab, the Yishmaelim and the Notzrim, It's everything, the war is between those factions, and the reason Lost and Lobo with, you know, Shama Horesha, so it has to be in Eretz Israel because that's where they drove us out from, and therefore the Milchemes Gogu Magog eventually will be in Eretz Israel because that's where it has to be. And it'll, the point of it being so that we could witness it.
Okay, look what's going on today. Today it's really remarkable today where, you know, you have this war in Gaza, and the whole wide world, Mikotze Lakotze, has access to express their opinion as to who's right, who's wrong. Who would ever imagine such a thing was possible? The war is not just a war in Gaza. There's a war going on in the entire world. The entire world is taking sides, rooting for one side or the other. There's no head of state that can just ignore and be silent. Every single member of this world is connected in such a way. When you read a pasuk like this that says, "Hine yoyim bo lashem," says V'yosafti es kol hagoyim el Yerushalayim. Well, you're going to say, you know, if you go back 200 years ago and you read this pasuk, really, Hashem is going to gather all of the nations to Yerushalayim. Really, how many people live in the world 200 years ago? There had to be at least a couple of billion. If today there were 8 billion people supposedly living in this world, so how many billion of people live in the world 200 years ago? I don't know, but a lot, right? It would be a lot of, really, all of the goyim are going to come to, where are they going to fit? Where are you going to provide
they
them with?
They go to the UN, and right there,
do even better.
Come physically.
Oh, so 50 years ago, you would say they go to the UN, but today it's even better than that. Because today with social media, today with your little device, this little device over here, the whole world, the pasuk, the words of the pasuk leap off the page. The whole world has access, the whole world comments, the whole world sees, and everyone says they're Deya, as if the Gadol Hadar, they know everything. It's unbelievable. The words of the prophets take on a whole new meaning. They leap off the page.
El Yerushalayim means Al Yerushalayim.
Right, correct, right. El means many times, El means Al. It means concerning. Concerning Yerushalayim. The Jews have no friends. And you see the anti-Semitism. It's unbelievable. You say they it's been in the news, I read yesterday a few times, is Twitter and Facebook. You know, they canceled a group that had 77 million people who come together to pray for Israel. Okay, do you know about this? 70, there's a group, I don't know about this group, Goyim. They're part,
familiar to me, but I heard
people
that.
Have followed, people have joined this group. 77 million people who show support for Eretz Yisrael. So Mark Zuckerberg, who's a Jew, decided, so I don't like the Jews. So the ultimate self-hating Jew, he decided single-handedly that these 77 million people should not come together to show support for Eretz Yisrael. Cancelled. Puff of smoke. Cancelled. But the Ayatollah, who also has a Facebook page and calls for the destruction of the state of Israel and every living Jew in this world.
It's Twitter
and Facebook also. Okay, they should remain. So this is not what you call a war. This is not an example of what it means. It means over here that Yosafti es kol hagoyim el Yerushalayim. Oh, you'll say that Mark Zuckerberg is a Jew. He's not a Jew.
No.
You know, this goes back to this old principle in America. In America, we have this principle, no Jew may be left behind. Chabad, you got to go find a yichus and shake him out and put on tefillin and bring out that nitzitz of kedusha in every single Jew. this is a new thing, and maybe it's very obvious. I'm sure. But before World War II, back in Europe, it was very clear, and people don't like to talk about this, is that people who wanted out are out. They're out. Don't go and try to bring these people back. People who don't want to be Jews are not Jews. Someone like Mark Zuckerberg can cause so much harm, bring out so much hate, promote so much hate to Eretz, is instrumental in promoting Hamas and suppressing support for Eretz Yisrael. You call him a Jew? You call him a Jew? You want to put tefillin on such a person? I mean, maybe the people before World War II, maybe they knew something we didn't know. I mean, how far did you go? How far do you go in trying to find and seek out every Pintle Yid?
Were the so-called rabbinical students, you know about that?
So-called
rabbinical students, yeah. that are on Hamas's side.
Okay, so how far do you go? In the times of Christianity started, who were the Christians? They were Jews. Yeah. They were Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. They were all in shul. You didn't know who was a believer in Yeshu and who believed, who did not believe in Yeshu. They all davened in the same shul. They all observed Shabbos. They all wore tefillin. They all learned the Torah. Some of them had these strange ideas. And the Tannaim saw that this is going to be the end of Klal Yisrael. So what do? They took these Jews and they got rid of them. They took them. They separated them, and they told them, you don't need to observe Shabbos. Why should we observe Shabbos? Why do you have to observe Shabbos? It's the ancient Torah that's over. You should have a separate day, observe Sunday, and you don't need to wear tefillin in order to... They went out of their way, could you imagine, to remove Jews from Judaism because of the danger that they pose. So we say we have the Nesu Olav Kol Hagoyim Eli Yosafti Es Kol Hagoyim Eli Yerushalayim. Whose side is Mark Zuckerberg on? Is he on our side or is he on Yosafti Es Kol Hagoyim Eli Yerushalayim? The power that he has single-handedly to control, as they say in the news, to control the narrative, is unprecedented. Unprecedented. He has more power than the three branches of the United States government combined. He really does. It's just an incredible, incredible thing. How, and Bill Gates, all these people who control technology and their private companies. Okay, they can do whatever they want. The government can't touch them. They're protected. We're not protected. No, our freedom of speech is not protected, but their authority of their private enterprise is protected, and they have succeeded in entering into society in such a way where you can't just create overnight a new Facebook. It doesn't work like that. You know how much technology has been invested to create such a system? You can't create it overnight. You can't just copy that. It'll take decades to replicate what has been done. And who says the replication will be any less corrupt? If the Republicans would make their own platform, they would censor everyone also.
No.
What? No, you don't think the Republicans, if they had control, they would censor? What goes around comes around.
Leave the Republicans out of it. Decent people
become corrupt very quickly. Look at the Chashmonoim. The Chashmonoim were decent people, and they became corrupt.
So let's just give up, right?
Not give up. That's life. Sit back and enjoy the show. What else are you going to do? You don't give up. Of course not. You're right. You're 100% right. But we have to look. So it's a chalil, a choizer chalil, a gilgul ha-choizer ba'olam. Today, who is corrupt? Look, it's not for nothing Jews with Democrats. What happened? How come all the Jews are still Democrats today? It's for a reason.
Every guy asks that question.
It's a reason because years ago, it was understood that the Republicans are corrupt and the Democrats are.
They just didn't identify them.
And now we're living now. Now our what's the expression? The eggs have come back.
The chickens
have come. It's a that's the way the world goes. That's the way the world goes. Let's go back. Over here, there's going to be this incredible war. And Hashem will come forward and he will wage a war against the Goyim on that day, Kiyoim, like the day he lochamoy, when he went to war, Biyoim Karov. What does that mean? That's a hard expression. Which war are we referring to? Of course, that is going to be subject to much interpretation. Let's see the Mitzvah studied, Pasuk Aleph. Pasuk Aleph, Hine. Atana Yisaper Ech Yavo. What am I reading over there? I'm sorry, wrong place. I'm sorry. The Mitzvah studied is on page 844. Pasuk Aleph LaHashem, Hine Yoyim Bo LaHashem, Ritzon Lema Miyuchud Loi V'Shabor Etzloi, a day that is Miyuchud, Hashem has been waiting for this day from time immemorial. V'chulak She'lelech V'kabech, Ritzon Lema Kol HaShol, She'shalu Hu'umais Mimech Mimos Oilam Toshav Loch. An incredible Pasuk. All of everything that we have has been robbed from us. The Goyim have stolen everything from us. This, from days of yore, will be returned to you. Usuchulak bekirbech, it will be distributed amongst you. Loseis lechol echad chalko, everyone will get his portion. Now, by the way, this does not just mean money. This means spirituality. For example, I was learning yesterday about the difference between the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. Everyone, we all learn Talmud Bavli. Why? Talmud Bavli was developed. Talmud Bavli was refined. It was a project that 500 years of work went into developing the Talmud Bavli. What about the Talmud Yerushalmi? Not so much. Much less. The amount of manpower, effort, labor that went into Talmud Yerushalmi is not nearly as significant as the amount of effort that went into producing Talmud Bavli. Why not? There was a team of incredible Talmidei Chachamim Eretz Yisrael that was just as powerful, just as smart, just as brilliant, and had and holy. And in fact, we know that Uzahav Eretz Ahi Toiv Shama Habidelach Ve'Evan Hashayam, the Kedush of Eretz Yisrael is even greater than the Kedush of Chutz Eretz. Certainly, the Chochma that could have been incorporated into the Talmud Yerushalmi should have far surpassed the Chochma and the beauty of the Talmud Bavli. So, why then is the Talmud Yerushalmi on the shelf collecting dust? Not totally, but why is it minor relative? No, the answer is persecution. Persecution. The Christians basically shut it down. The Christians had a very powerful hold, tfisa, upon Klal Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael at that time, after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, and they basically prevented them from being able to produce. They persecuted them. They ran them out of town. The pogroms were far worse in Eretz Yisrael than in Bavel, and that is what stole from Klal Yisrael the Talmud Yerushalmi. When we think about the Goyim, they stole our spoils of war. What did they steal? You look at it, you watch Schindler's List, and you see how all the Christians, how all the Nazis, they were pillaging, plundering, and taking, and telling you, pack up your suitcase, get on the train, and the next thing is they go into the house and they take whatever they want, all the jewelry, all the gold, the silver, they stole everything. So Mashiach will come, so we'll get a nice check from the government. Here's $10 million to pay you back for
reparations.
That's what the pasuk means. Is that really what the pasuk means? It means that also, but it means a lot more than that. It means that when Mashiach will come, Kadosh Baruch Hu will give back to us in the spiritual world what the Goyim have stolen from us. They stole from us our ability to accomplish in Ruchnis, in Chochmah, in the Chochmah Hashem, Yerushalayim, and to create institutions and create lives that are filled with spirituality. That is the real crime. Money is money. Without money, in kemach in Torah. But once you have money, what do you do next? What do you do with all the money? You go to Dubai and you look at the fish. What do you do with the money when you have all the money? Dubai, it's like, you see some of these videos, but what's like in Dubai, it's like, money is nothing, water. And people, they're happy, they're not happy, they're miserable. What is it? What's all the money going to do for you? The money is just a tool. The real spoils of war are the spiritual achievements that we would have attained had our enemies not suppressed and canceled and denied us the ability. Case in point, Talmud Yerushalmi. The Talmud Yerushalmi has been stolen from Klal Yisrael. It was never developed. Why? And it would have been developed to a degree where today we would be learning Talmud Daf Yomi, Talmud Yerushalmi, not Talmud Bavli, Talmud Yerushalmi. Its growth was stunted. Why? Going. Persecution, pogroms, torture, political maneuvering. Okay? Like what goes on today. There's a lot of evil. Evil is real. Don't underestimate the koyach of evil. People don't realize how much evil there is in this world. The koyach of ra.
Not how much. They don't recognize the concept.
You don't know the concept. I remember you, I met once one person. He just radiates with evil. Most people, they don't mean harm, right? They don't mean harm. You don't even know. Some people, they radiate. They radiate with this desire to do right, to bring evil. This is what the pasuk means, that v'chulak shalef v'kbech, it's a lemma, kol ha-shalom sh'sholuhum v'zmineich. All of the spoils, all of the spoils that they have plundered, your wealth, your riches, especially in Ruchnius, Hashem says, I'll make it up to you. The days will come when you will have an opportunity to make up what has been lost to you. And to a degree, look at this generation. Look how much learning there is. Look at the opportunities that are available to people. Even just the volume, I still baffled. Just the volume, this art school volume. I told Nassim Sherman, here in this shul, he was here, Nassim Sherman was here, but Nassim was here, when we were here before Corona broke out. They had a Sim HaShas. And I told him that we learned here, I told him he came, he was the guest speaker.
Yeah.
They made a Sim HaShas, the Daf Yomi, Rabbi Dubin, and Rabbi Einemer.
Yeah, I remember that.
They had a Sim HaShas, and the guest speaker was Rabbi Nassim Sherman. It was Mitzvah Shabbos. It was right before Corona broke out. And I went over to him and I told him, you know, we learned upstairs. And I said, you know, I'm a product of art school. And I knew my family knew Rabbi Meir Zlotowitz much. My father was very close with him. But I don't know. If I used to listen to his tapes as a child. He had this series of tapes on Dialadaf. I used to go to sleep listening to them. The New York Times reporting of the Holocaust. A whole series of lectures by Rabbi Nassim Sherman analyzing the New York Times day by day during the Holocaust, during the Holocaust, those 6 years of the Holocaust, how the New York Times reported
or didn't, how they
reported to the world what was happening to European Jews. Can you imagine? So he gave, you can get them online. He gave like 100 lectures. I found those lectures very, very fast. Whatever, everyone knows about Nassim Sherman, you know. I told him all of the products that we've made. The one that is the most amazing is this Hebrew edition of Tanakh. And, you know, the whole Tanakh series. When I was a child, you know, it was torture. You have a class in Shmuel, Yeshua, Shef, and Shmuel. I can go now, right now, to your bookcase and take out the Shmuel and try to read the Mitzvah study. On the Sefer and Shmuel on your bookcase if you have from 30 years ago. Try to go read the Mitzvah study to learn a Pshat in the Pasuk. I can't even read the letters. these teeny little letters in Rashi's script, forget it. I'm out of here. And today you have something like this where literally the letters leap off the page. It comes alive. Everything, if we had this years ago, would have been a different world. But the problem is the kids have it today and they're also not interested. So I don't know where we're going wrong. What? The Nekuda, right, this is the first of its kind. It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling what they did over here. You can't even begin to imagine what they did over here. You try to put Nekudas in every single word. You know what it's like? It's incredible. And today we're living in a generation where Kadosh Baruch Hu is giving us things that our ancestors could not even fathom, to have such opportunities and tools and technology to give every person the ability to learn and to make up what has been stolen from us all of these generations. What has been taken away because of persecution, pogroms, what has been denied by the enemies of the Jewish people in one dimension, today this pasuk is being fulfilled in our generation, where the level of chinuch, the ability to be, the opportunities, you have to take advantage of course, but the opportunities and the tools and the resources that are available, it's unbelievable. This pasuk is being fulfilled right in front of our eyes. Of Hinei Yoyim Bo LaHashem. That's today. Today. Wednesday. What's today's date?
26th.
Already the 26th? I thought it was the 25th. 26th. Today, Hayoyim, 26th. Hayoyim Yoyim Bo LaHashem. V'chulak Shulech V'kebeich. When Zechariah said this pasuk, he was singing the morning call of here. it's being fulfilled. The opportunities are being restored to us like never before. Pasuk Beis. The Osafti, I will gather as Cholagim, but in the Mitzvot of Osafti, Ato Yifarish Ich Toshuv Lachem Shalom. The Amar Hinei Oyil Dibois Cholagim Hinei Heim Chel Goyg Umagoyg Lehisasef Mulavoy. Okay, going back to Goyg Umagoyg, they're going to gather Al El Yerushalayim Lamelchah Benashas Rabotim. It's an Olam Yapilu Rabotim. The Al of Nehem Yir Misubaraglayim, they're going to step on stones. The Yansu Es Hanashim L'Mishkav HaMishgol. Okay, a very frightening thing what this means. And they're going to go and they're going to come to Yerushalayim and they're going to rape Noshim. It's a very, very frightening thing. We know this happened in Germany. Okay, not in Yerushalayim. I mean, wherever what?
46.
It happened in Yerushalayim?
It's happened all through.
I mean, from a large guy. It happens every day, unfortunately.
It happens all through history in
any war. Any war.
Which is probably the reason why we have
Yifas Kelim. Well, that's when we go to war against them.
That's what I'm saying, because it always happens.
Okay, it's a matter of war. This is what happens in the war when men. This is the dark side of what goes on in the military, in the military, when the men go out away from home for a long time. The Yeser Ha'am. The Yeser Ha'am Achitzi Hanishar Af Min Ho'ir Lo Yikareis V'Yishadu V'Mukhaman. And the remnant, the other half of the people that remain in the city, they will not be cut out, they will not be cut down, they will remain in their place. Okay, what's that all about? I don't know. Next words of the Mitzvah's pasuk: "Gimel Yotzei Hashem Oz Yetzei Hashem Hem Shemayim Vilocham Agoy Mahem." Hashem will come forth min Hashemayim, from heaven, and he will go to war against these nations. Lugman ula Adam, to confuse them and to destroy them. Kiyoy. Now here is the hard part of the pasuk. Just like the day that Hashem waged war on the day of war, there's verbosity, and it's extremely vague what these words mean. And the Mitzvah's stuff it says Kiyoy Vilocham Bumiyot Kerov. Whenever the Mitzvah David says these two words, it means fasten your seatbelts. I'm going to tell you something that you never thought of. I'm going to add a whole bayer into the words. He understands this to refer to, we're going to go back to how it all started. The end takes us back to the beginning. What was the beginning of Klal Yisrael? Yitzias Mitzrayim. Hashem, he waged war against the Egyptians, the 10 Makos Bechoros, and Kriyas Yamsuf, it's going to be repeated all over again. History repeats itself. In Mitzrayim, B'yoyim Milchemes Yamsuf, specifically the day of the Yamsuf, Kriyas Yamsuf, Shenem Arbo, Hashem Yilochem Lochem. That's what the brilliance of the Mitzudos David. He's taking this pasuk here and he's making a direct correlation, a direct connection to Hashem Yilochem Lochem. Hashem will fight for you. The Atem.
That's what Rav Arbanel says.
The Atem Tacharishon.
It was the Egyptian prototype.
But correct. The Chaim Choyek Yashem. Tiba Bayam, the Yeshol Bol Lishlol Shalom. What happened there? The Bizas Hayam. There was Bizas Mitzrayim, and there was Bizas Hayam. Chazal say that the spoils that they took from the Yam were far, far more than what they took when they left Egypt. When they left Egypt, they borrowed a few things here and there, but when it came to the Yam, what they took from the Yam was unlimited. The wealth was, it's very bizarre that the Egyptians, why did the Egyptians take with them into the Yam their money? Isn't it bizarre? You go to war. Before you go to war, I have to go to the ATM machine to take out of the bank all the money. You put in your wallet, and then you go to war, and the Egyptian drowns, and the Jew goes, takes his wallet home. Oh, look in the wallet. I have here $10,000. What's that about? Why in the world would the Egyptians stop at what? It makes no sense, right? It makes no sense. Why?
You think they would travel light.
Exactly. Or you don't take your wallet altogether. When you go, it's like Shabbos. Shabbos, you take your wallet with you.
It's like,
you leave it at home. So why do they do this?
It's like they wore all their fancy gold chains.
Yeah, why do they do this? You go
to
work. What's
up,
going on?
When you conquer, you come in, you buy everything cheap.
So this is something that is a big hot topic. Some want to suggest the following. This is a tremendous Kiddush. The Egyptians, it was such an easy thing in their eyes to wipe out the Jewish people. It was a piece of cake. What are these slaves? These are Shvacha mentioned. The Egyptians, they were the world power. Sheish me'ois rechav bochro. To us, it doesn't sound like much. 600 chariots. But that would mean
it says the whole rechav before chosen.
So that means in modern terms, the entire power of the United States, all of the armed forces, the army, the marines, the navy, the air force, and now there's a new branch, the cyber branch.
The space.
All together coordinated to wipe out 600,000 Shvacha people, nomads, with women and children. That's a piece of cake. So what were they planning to do with the Muslims? When they would come to the battlefield and wipe them out, they would celebrate. They were going out to celebrate. Let us bring your camping gear, bring your goggles we're gonna have a party. We're gonna have a lavish celebration of getting rid of this nation that is the moral conscience of the world. We're gonna free ourselves from this disease, the Jewish people. It was a call for celebration. The war was secondary. The war was just, the beginning of the celebration. So they brought with them their finest jewelry and their gowns and dresses and their Sunday best and all of their jewelry. That's the plan. The war to wipe out 600,000 Jews? What's 600,000 Jews against the power of Egypt? Egypt was a dynasty. You read about ancient Egypt, it's not to be believed how much power they had. You really wonder what it was, a different world. We think the United States is powerful. We think we live in a world with this power. You read about what it was like in the dynasties, these magnificent dynasties in Egypt. It's just mind-boggling how much power and authority and glory existed in those days. Where did these people go? I don't know what happened to the world. It was some type of natural disaster. They all disappeared off the face of the earth. Maybe. Who knows what happened to these people? But it was a different world. And these Jews, a couple of slaves, Big deal. They went out to celebrate. This was what they went out for. And that's why they took with them all of their wealth. And when they were all destroyed, Klal Yisrael inherited the wealth of the world. And it says when Mashiach will come, it's going to be exactly the same thing. V'chein choya Hashem, ki Hashem tim b'yom yivishol bo l'shvol sh'volam, v'chein yihye le'osid. Choyzer chalila. We're going to go back. History repeats itself. With the coming of Mashiach, it's going to be the same thing like it was by Yitzias Mitzrayim. They're going to come out to attack us. They're going to think of it as a joke. It's the piece of cake just to eliminate the Jewish people. And we're going to celebrate. And Hashem is going to eliminate them. And we will inherit what is really rightfully ours.
It's interesting that you made a point that why did the Mitzrayim want to get rid of the Jewish people rather than bring them back and re-enslave them, right?
Moral conscious, like I never shot or whatever.
I've seen a number of articles
yeah.
lately trying to explain why the left hates the Jews so much. The left hates the Jews or Israel so much, and that's often brought up the moral conscience.
Oh, so today, this morning,
and which informs the way the U.S. was founded and so on, this so-called Judeo-Christian morality. So this is also reappearing.
Right. So there was a clip today that is going around. I actually heard someone in the shir listening to it a few moments ago. And Rabbi Schiller, is that his name, from Ar Sameach? Ar Sameach, it is really good. He's very eloquent. It's only 2-3 minutes. And that's why I said that, because he basically says, he has a very nice story. I'll try to find it, maybe send it on the Kol chat. And, you know, he's eloquent, and his words are very powerful, they're very true. And it explains a lot about why they hate us. We always speak about why they hate us. There are many reasons why they hate us. But as you say, one of the reasons why the Goyim hate us is because we give them no peace. This is what he said. The Jews do not give the Goyim any peace. Why not?
We don't give ourselves any.
Why not? Because the Jews are the moral conscience of the world. The Jews, they represent the Ohavta L'Re'acha Kamocha. And we live in a world. We live in a world where you have to love yourself. Love yourself and only yourself. Me, myself, and I. And the Goyim, when the Goyim looks at a Jew and he sees a Jew, what he really sees is you have to l'reyacha kamaycha, not love yourself. And that disturbs their whole approach to life. And they can't live with themselves. They can't live with themselves. And that is a subconscious irritant in the minds of the Ummah Yisraelam, which caused them to react and behave in a way that doesn't make any sense. They hate themselves because we don't let them live. Because they realize the Jews are, as I'm trying, I'm not saying it well, you'll have to listen to how he says
Jews,
it.
And the Jews among them.
Jews represent pure, like I know of a woman, I always told this story, it's all over here, and it's so true. A woman, she works in a law firm. And now if you know these law firms, they're brutal. Mm-hmm. They're brutal, man-eat-man. It's just a brutal existence.
And they have a rent there to keep up the employees.
It's a brutal existence. So I know of a woman, and I know the story secondhand, but I know it's 100% true that the partner, one of the big partner in one of the biggest law firms in America, and there was a frum woman. I don't think she was a partner. I think she was just an associate. And she worked on many of the deals. She worked very hard. You know, they worked her like a dog. And then there was another very important deal, deal they were working on. And he called her and says, "We're having a meeting. You must come to the meeting. This is a very big meeting." So she says, "I'm not on this deal. Why do you want me to be there? I don't work on this deal, and I'm very, very busy. There's enormous pressure. I need every second I have. I can't come to the meeting, especially it's total nonsense. What do you want from me? I says, I don't care. I don't care what you're working on. You must come to the meeting. Why? So he says to her, I'll tell you why. You're an Orthodox woman. And I've noticed in all of the deals that we've worked on that you were there, when you're not there, the men, they curse, they're vulgar, they're wicked. The atmosphere at the meeting is just over the top. When you're there,
that bothered them?
Just your presence, the presence, your presence, you're regal. You're basically, he's saying to them, your Yiras Shamayim radiates amongst all of the participants. And whenever you're at a meeting with us, there's no nivel peh. He didn't say the word nivel peh. There's no, everyone is polite. Everyone is civil. And we work through the issues. And it's a pleasure. And at the end of the meeting, we accomplish, we achieve, and everyone walks out in peace. When you're there, it's not a matter of what you say, what you contribute, even though, of course, this woman, she contributes, just your regal presence.
Dignified.
Your dignified presence. You radiate with Yiras Shamayim. And we're having now a very important meeting. I know you're not involved. You don't know what's going on. Doesn't matter.
Make her a partner.
Just your presence will change the dynamics of this whole meeting. What does that mean?
I would like to say something about this subject. I was in Israeli army. We had many, many wars. Two things. There is one thing that was called Tohar HaNeshek, the purity of the arms. It was a symbol, like a code for two things. Never an enemy wife was raped. Anybody by Israeli soldier, never in all the wars. Number one, number two, never they took shalal. They never took any shalal from the Arabs. You know, they conquered a city or a town, or whatever. And you hear, you see the pasuk here, shalal, and anashim tishachavna. The goyim do the opposite. Why? Why do they do it? But my opinion is because they know that the Jews care about purity. So they'd like to defile the purity, if it's a woman or shalal. These are two things, not ignore and not and don't rape. They do the opposite. But I remember the Torah HaNeshek, but this was the Israeli army. Never. My father came from the war, he didn't come with nothing. He said, you didn't take anything from the... No, you're not allowed to. That's it.
Excellent. Excellent.
I don't know if Kalman remembers theology. This, but some years ago, an Israeli woman wrote a doctoral thesis, which was to show how crazy some people on the left are. She wrote a doctoral thesis.
Can you hear me okay? Yeah.
The fact that the Israeli army never raped a woman was racist.
What?
This was an actual doctoral thesis.
You hear what he just said?
That's how crazy.
You hear what he said?
I read it too.
You hear what he said?
Five, 6 years ago.
That's what we're dealing with today. That says it all. That's what woke, this is what woke means. That's what we're dealing with over here. It's unreal. Okay, so this is what it means of it. This is the Jew is the moral conscience, and therefore they hate themselves. And they hate themselves, they take it out on us. That's one of the many dimensions of anti-Semitism. There are many dimensions of anti-Semitism. But one of the dimensions of anti-Semitism is they hate themselves. A Jew, when you look at a Jew and you see their dignity and their values, and you realize how little you have, you hate yourself. And instead of hitting yourself, You take it out on someone else.
No, it's this. Instead of climbing to that level, they want to reduce everyone down to that level.
Well, yes.
That's another approach. That's right. That's also the same. They're acting out like children. Okay, that's what. Then that's not the only way we use anti-Semitism, but you see that, you mamash see that today. You see, listen, it's an amazing, like you say, in Kol HaGoyim, if you go on social media and you just look at the news, what's going on, how every yokel has a day, every the weatherman also is entitled to go and tell you his opinion about the Jews in Hamas. You're the weatherman. Who asked you for your opinion about Hamas? What's your business? That's what it means. V'nesu kol ha'goyim. Even the mailman. Okay, boys, we'll take a short break. Afterwards, we have a very interesting topic. New topic we never did before. This parsha's Behaloyscha. The parsha, it's Mayor Appeldorf's favorite parsha. Not just because his wife came back today from Eretz Yisrael, but because it's the parsha of the Levim. The parsha of the Levim. And one of the things that we do every single day relating to the Levim is, even more than Kohanim, Hayoim Yoim Revihi B'Shabo Shebo Hoyu HaLevim Oimrim B'Veis HaMikdash. What about Mikdash? Different Nuschois in the Siddur. We say every single day the Shira when davening is over, just like what the Levim did in the Beis HaMikdash. So I want to talk about the Shira and some very interesting things, how it applies Bizman Azet to the Nusach Davening. And here it's Hashem in 2 minutes after we come back after our coffee break.
We need two more guys to make a minion, guys. You're welcome to show up.
I ain't.
You don't want them?
I'm not participating in any minion here.
What do you mean? It's two. It's
you made people in
but you can't daven until 1:30.
No, I'm not talking about davening.
Kaddish. We say Kaddish. We can say we haven't said Kaddish in the shir in a long time.
We used to say Kaddish.
Yeah. Aruch Hashem.
Very.
Wow, it's been such a long time. Isn't it amazing?
Why does it say Hayom Yom Shibaya Levim Aimer? Why didn't it say Shayu Sharim?
Oh, excellent. We'll talk about that.
Huh?
Very good. Whoever said that the Shira means they actually sang.
They stood on the steps.
Maybe it means
Shira Malish, yeah.
It means they said. A python is called a Meshoirer. A person who composes
right, a poet.
Doesn't necessarily mean to sing. Okay, so Enoch, we'll talk about that. Enoch and Ami doesn't necessarily mean they have to sing.